Get a job.
Work hard.
And one day you can retire and do the things you want.
That's the typical formula for daily life in the modern world.
And it works. For lots of people, this kind of life is perfect.
But it's not for us. And I'm guessing that it's not for you either.
I'm David Allan Patali.
And I'm Carmen Allan Patali. And together we run the content company Red Platypus.
I'm also a published fiction author.
And we have two young daughters who keep us on our toes.
We've both said no to well-paid jobs in favour of pursuing our creative paths. And we want to walk them with you.
Freelancer, digital nomad, artist, creative, self-employed. Whatever you want to call it, if you work for yourself and want to keep it that way, or want to be free from the 9-to-5 and don't know where to start, we want to help.
We're going on a journey to speak to committed creatives, people who are all in, who have made highly successful businesses out of their creativity, and ask them how they do it while retaining the magic.
Because while we think inspiration is good, we've come to learn that process is vital.
Welcome to the Committed Creative Podcast, your toolkit for the creative life you want.
Here's to going all in and becoming a committed creative.
How much do you value your creative work? I don't mean emotionally or spiritually. I mean cold, hard cash. The divide between the value of what an artist or creative does and how much they're paid for it is often wide. But while it's easy to say that society undervalues creative work, perhaps it's because creatives don't put a high enough dollar value on what they do. Hi, I'm David from Red Platypus, and I know all about being undervalued for my creative work. Being a published author is definitely not the same thing as being a CEO, but while I've gotten better at pricing myself right, my guest on the Committed Creative Podcast this week has challenged every notion I have on why I need to raise my rates. Jasmine Holmes is a graphic designer in Melbourne who's known online as Jasmine Designs. Click on her website and you get two Jasmines, one a design superwoman who will rescue your project, the other a pricing queen who will whip your invoices into shape. Jasmine's passionate about pursuing her art and getting paid what she's worth. Today on the Committed Creative Podcast, you'll hear Jazz's story of how she backed herself to do her own thing and the mentality and tactics she's cultivated to ensure she works with the right people who are happy to pay for the privilege. I started by asking Jazz why her office was so brightly painted.
If you want to be in and believe in a space and believe in what you're doing in that space, you need to surround yourself with your own brand, your own experience, and your own surround yourself with the colors that inspire you. And if your brand is what is inspiring you, great, you can actually surround yourself with the colors. So anything or any opportunity that I have to paint, dye, color in anything around in my surroundings is taking on that opportunity. I often say I don't have a favorite color, but my blood runs teal. This is actually a romper that I got from Target that I subsequently dyed teal from a dye from Spotlight, and then painted my wall behind me teal, painted my drawers from Kmart, all of my corporate colors, and it's basically so that I can believe in my brand as much as the colors believe in me, I guess.
Oh, I love it. Surround yourself with what inspires you. I mean, I guess for me it's posters of sailing yachts and mid-century furniture. But that reminds that reminds me when I'm writing my fiction. That reminds me of the sort of aesthetics that I'm going for, at least in the words. I don't write about yachts, but yeah.
Absolutely. And if you can kind of it's kind of like a hack in a way. They do say that the people that you surround yourself with really help you work out who you are as a person and help drive the thoughts and processes that you have. But the same thing goes for the effects of color theory and the words that you put up. Like, you know, those who have mood boards or who write down their goals are more likely to succeed with them. So if you can do the same thing with surrounding yourself with your brand, perfect opportunity to just kind of hack the brain into thinking that way.
Well, Jazz, you're someone that's, you know, we're speaking to you because you've built this life for yourself, You live it every day and you're continuing to build it. Can you take us all the way back to the start? Was there a point where you were perhaps doing something else and then you decided, no, I want to go all in what I'm doing? Can you tell, it's a very broad question, but can you tell us the story of how you came to be in this room?
Well, let's go right back about 32, 33 years ago when a bouncing bundle of joy who was put forth into the world with what I believe that I had was the three kind of key things that make me me. I believe that I had the gift of the gab, the absolute ability to talk to anyone and everyone about anything and everything, the mindset of a creative in that nothing is ever finished, which is also known as perfectionism, and the third thing I would say is the ability to know that no path is linear. Nothing is set and it's never going to be step one, two, three. There'll be like a step A to Z somewhere in there. And so if you kind of were to put a magnifying glass or a telescope across my creative journey, it's definitely been one that has had twists, turns, sometimes a dog leg or two, and it's never been a consistent thing. So when I was younger, I would follow my mum, who was an entrepreneur, a hairdresser, from place to place. And I would also always have a coloured pencil and a piece of paper and the gift of my imagination to keep me occupied. And that took me all through my childhood. I was always trying to create something that didn't exist yesterday. And that's always been the driving force for me. I also come from two entrepreneurial parents, one being in hairdressing and the other being in butchery. And my dad, being a butcher, always kept the ideals of you need to be big enough to serve someone, but small enough to know them. So you need to know enough to help someone solve their problems, but you need to be small enough to be able to connect with them on a human level, because that's the most important thing, is that we can connect with each other on human levels. So if you look at my schooling, I was always the person, I was always the student that was sitting back in the design studios until 6 p.m. when the design teacher is like, can you go home? Like, I want to go home to my family, so can you go away? I know you're in year 12 and you're getting all of your possible time and effort and energy out. But it was definitely something that I found passion in, because the time just flew. Time flew when I was creating, because I was in my happy spot. And then I actually started my career as a graphic designer at the end of the job, because when I was learning about design, it was always start at the end of the job so you can see the hurdles and the things that you're going to have to conquer to be able to get there. So I started in printing, I started in signage, and all about the end result so that I could work my way back. So I worked in sign writing houses, in print studios. I did a stint in aged care and retirement living advertising, as well as, you know, large-scale sign writing. And from those sort of experiences, I kind of learned quickly, okay, this is what is expected at the end. How can we make that referenced and recognized at the beginning of the journey? I then found myself probably 4 or 5 years, maybe 6 years into my design career, having worked in all of these different places and experienced all these different things, in a design studio that was the epitome of what I didn't want. The people there said, this is where creatives come when they're sick of being creative. They just want to do the work and go home. And that broke my heart, because I had been striving so hard to try and become this designer and create this creative life that I was proud of, and that I was able to be challenged and enjoy the challenge each day. And that was not the environment I was in. And at the time, I misconstrued and misunderstood that mentality as the creative mentality. So my brain went, well, I have to get out. I have to go. I have to do something else that makes me happy. Now here's the part where you see a little bit further into behind the teal. Jasmine was a performer, an artist, a singer, a Lady Gaga impersonator back in Adelaide. I perform as Lady Gaga and perform in musicals and in theatre, and that was my other passion. So the natural progression from, okay, if I'm having to change careers, let's find something else that I'm passionate about. And I did a musical theatre course, which brought me from Adelaide to Melbourne. I did that for a year and I learned some really good things about myself. One, I don't respond well to criticism that I can't personally fix.
Yes.
By my skills. It had to be a physical or a mental thing, I guess. I didn't like when I wasn't naturally gifted at something and found myself easily frustrated.
Sure. Yeah.
And also the industry of musical theatre and performing arts as a whole was not where I wanted to be. So I ran back into the loving arms of graphic design, but with a new location, Melbourne. So through that, I then started doing creative recruiting. I spent a lot of time being the solution that they would throw into the mix when someone needed a problem solved. I would go into businesses and have to act really quickly and basically jump into these situations of, okay, we've got someone who is off and you need to pick up the slack. Or we've had a previous recruit that walked out the day before. We need you to smooth it over and make everyone happy again.
Like the creative and firefighter, just come in.
I was basically the creative Olivia Pope. I'm coming in and I'm fixing things. I'm here to fix things, make everyone happy.
Yep.
And by doing that, not only was I exposed to a lot of different situations, I also was building this muscle of being able to be reactive but also proactive in those different situations. And I also got a really good insight into the different business models that happened or existed in these different places that I got placed, which made the transition of going from recruiting then into a six-month stint in a design studio here in Melbourne, which I found not suited to me whatsoever, and then transitioning into a part-time role for Rolex Australia and working as a graphic designer for Rolex Australia and using that as my kind of gap year into transitioning into full-time freelance, it basically gave me the ability to go, okay, these are all the different things that are existing. This is the buffet of business that exists in the world. What do you want to put on your plate to take you into the next phase of your life?
Yes.
And that was when I went full-time freelance as a graphic designer near on 6 or 7 years ago.
Fantastic.
And here we are today.
Well, that's great. In the beginning, like you say, no path is linear, but
absolutely.
Was it ever a goal to be full-time freelance, or is it something that evolved or happened, or did you have it in mind when you started from the beginning?
I think so. At the start of my, you know, graduating from advanced diploma in graphic design through TAFE, I had always, on my journey to work, there was always this little studio that I drove past every day, and it had a yellow door. And I know that sounds like a really insignificant thing, but I had always dreamed of the idea that I was one day going to have a studio called Tidy Designs, T-Y-D, the yellow door, because it was always something that I was like, okay, that'll be one day.
You see that?
And I had always envisioned that I would have my own studio one day, but I needed to learn enough to be able to be there, to be able to be at the level that I wanted to, at the service level I wanted, to be able to serve the clients that I wanted to attract. And I just had to get there. And that's why I kind of sit there and go, okay, the path is never linear. It's about getting all of the different tastes as you go along to try and work out where you want to be and where you want to go. And I'm still learning. I still believe that I'm very much learning the process of where I do and don't want to be. I tried hiring people. I'm a terrible boss. I am the worst boss, not because I'm hard, but because I'm too nice.
Yeah.
I just want everyone to like me. And that doesn't work for management. But also I'm an incredibly finicky perfectionist. And so I truly believe that if I was ever to hire someone full time, the name would need to be Jasmine, because the business name is Jasmine Designs. It's just, you know, a requirement of entry. But you know, yes. Working out what you do like and what you don't like is just as important about working out what jobs you want to take on or kind of projects that you hate and say no to. It's all about that evolutionary process.
I like that. I don't want to sound too Oprah, but it sounds like a journey of self-discovery in the sense that you're around a lot of other creatives, but those other creatives are happy to stay in a place that, like you said, it was the antithesis of everything that you wanted. And I heard someone say, look, if you're like this, you'd better get used to it, because you'll constantly butt up against these. I had it myself. You know, I was a journalist for a long time. I was a corporate copywriter, that kind of thing. But I would just never want to stay in these environments, even though the paychecks were good, the mm-hmm. conditions were good, or the progression was good. Did you find yourself constantly being in that situation yourself?
I actually remember a moment which was just before I took on the part-time role at Rolex. So I had just left a studio that was incredibly toxic for me. I did not enjoy the studio whatsoever. And this opportunity arose where I had two really specific pathways laid out in front of me. One was the Rolex pathway, where I was only going to be able to be working 3 days a week, but it was a notable place to work. It was something that could be, you know, used and utilized to create proof of capabilities in the future, and would kind of start that pathway or pave the way into a freelance career. And the other one was almost the complete opposite. It was a studio that was very well renowned, very, I'd had interviews with both. I had the opportunity to go to either one that I chose, but that one had some core things that, you know, didn't align with who I was and what I wanted. They also had 8 a.m. meetings, not about it. and they had a culture where it was, you know, you stay late. You put in so much more work, but you do get the rewards. And at that point in time, I had to kind of check in with myself and say, okay, this kind of decision might actually make or break where you are in 5 years.
Yes.
And it can be a little bit overwhelming to think about that, of going, okay, well, what if a simple decision that I make today has the ability to be kind of butterfly effect and be completely change the way that you are in 5 years? And that's the situation that I was in. And I truly believe that I chose the thing that was right for me because I checked in with myself. And being able to understand that the other opportunity would have been right for someone else, or maybe even would have been right for me in a different frame of mind or stage in my life. Everyone has a different yum. Don't yuck someone else's yum just because it doesn't taste right in your taste buds. Freelance is not for everyone. Full-time work is not for everyone. Everyone has a different way that they're able to shine and blossom and bloom. And if you can, you know, work out what that is for you, you're going to have more conviction and more, you know, self-happiness to be able to do what you want to do day in and day out.
Oh, I really like that. Yeah, it's giving yourself grace, giving others grace, and then you come at it from a position of total strength, that this is a definite decision that you have made, and that you're, I mean, people often say it's so courageous. It's like, no, it's actually pretty well thought through. It does take gumption, but
yeah, like there's it's well thought through, but there's still the action of the first step.
Yes.
There's still the okay, forward motion. I've contemplated it from 17 different angles. I've rehearsed the trauma of 4 of those situations. so I'm prepared for anything.
That's right.
But it's, you know, it's also giving yourself grace and giving yourself the ability to accept the decision, but know that you can change down the line. It'll just mean that you're in a different spot than you were 6 months ago. You do the best you can with what you have when you have it, and you can change later.
7 years in, have you ever been tempted to go back?
There will always be days where I'm tempted to go back. and then I don't have an alarm in the morning, and I wake up and I cuddle the dog for half an hour, and I start my day with a coffee that my partner's brought in to me, and I have those moments where a client will come back to me 6 months after we've done our last project and say, I don't trust anyone else, or a client will recommend me to someone else, and I will get a message from that original client saying, I'm so happy I get to share you with others. Those are the moments that reaffirm me to go, oh no, I'm doing the right thing. And the main thing that I wanted to do with going freelance is to connect with people, because that was the one thing I didn't experience in studio life. In studio life, the client responds to something or submits a brief or gives feedback, which then goes to the client liaison or the account manager, which then trickles down through the art director, which then goes to the graphic designer. And to me, that was too much of a Chinese whispers for me to feel confident in what I was able to do and create, which is why the freelance system worked better for me. And that was something that I couldn't have known before. I could only know once I'd experienced it, worked out what the experience was and why it was important, and then moved on. Don't yes. sit and think about it and stew. You have the ability to change whatever you like in your life. You just need to get out of your own way.
I like that. Do you think you do better work now as a designer than...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
than what I was doing back then?
Yeah.
Yes, because I was able to find confidence in what I was doing. I was not confident back then because I was constantly surrounded by doubt. Complete doubt. And it was not only doubt in my own capabilities, but doubt in if I was doing what I wanted to do. It's amazing when that switch flips and you go, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be. It's a glowing feeling in the middle of your rib cage that makes you feel like this is where you're supposed to be.
And does it come from working with attracting the kind of clients that you actually really want to work with? I mean, the key to that is your website and your brand, everything that you're projecting out into the world. You know, you're putting something out and then the good stuff comes back. Whereas mm-hmm. in an agency, you just have to deal with whatever's put in front of you. Yeah, how do you go about attracting the sort of people you want to work with?
I say no to the ones I don't. It sounds really, really simple, but not every client's problem is yours to solve, and
that's
not
awesome.
Every client is your problem. I probably get more no's than yeses lately,
mm-hmm.
probably even in the last couple of years, I definitely get more no's than yeses, and that's from both sides. That's, you know, having the ability to see someone putting out a Facebook post and saying, can someone help me with a logo? And I go, not for me. And then I keep scrolling. And, you know, working out what you don't like and knowing that it's not, you're not the only creative that can solve that problem. Don't think that highly of yourself, my darling. Think that, you know, not every client is going to be your problem to solve. And, you know, realistically, they don't deserve, not every single client deserves what you do. What you do might be, you know, completely out of their budget from a monetary perspective, but it also might be outside of what they actually need, want, or are worth investing in. There's no point doing a job for a client and trying to convince them that you are worth it when they've already decided that you're not, and they're just doing it because you can use the software or
yes.
or you can draw. No. There is clients out there who value what you do. You just need to be able to say no to enough frogs to find your prince client.
I like this. And I guess it all circles back around to the original wisdom you got from your parents. You know, it's the ability to connect to people and to deliver what you can do in mm-hmm. that moment.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's quite strong. It's. Did you have to remember this, or was it always part of you and sort of coming up against different things, but now it can be expressed in its full power?
I have most definitely had situations where clients have breached that boundary or that capability that I've put up. It's like, you know, we've put the sign out in front of the house to say, we're open for business. This is the kind of stuff we want. And sometimes they'll sneak through, and that's an opportunity to reassess. That's an opportunity to step away. I've stepped away from from jobs midway. I've said, this is no longer working for me. This is no longer what I want to do. And this is no longer serving you nor I. I won't leave them in the lurch because that's not who I am as a person or as a creative. I will share them with someone who I think is more in tune or capable to be able to solve their problem and kind of, you know, nurture that process. But there's always going to be opportunities for you to sit there and go, okay, does this serve me? Does this give me what I need in the next stage of my life or whatever I'm doing next? And the way that I've traditionally done that is actually having seasons of yes and seasons of no. So I will have a season of yes, and a season can be anywhere from 1 month to a year, where I will say yes to anything and everything that comes across my plate that I feel like is something that I could potentially look at or potentially do. And that's led me to doing things that I never thought I would do, you know, creating large-scale murals for Bombay Sapphire and Australian Open, being able to hire some students and have them help me create fabric archways for Valentine's Day a couple of years ago, which are all out of recycled fabrics and that have a deeper meaning. It's given me opportunities to try new things while still getting paid. And then I get to a point where I go, okay, if I say yes one more time, we're going to burn out. We're going to just fall in a heap, fall in a puddle and just become a goo of jazz. Not ideal. So let's start saying no. We need to start saying no to the things that are no longer serving us. Yeah. I don't do logo design anymore. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. It's a very rare opportunity that I will take on a logo creation, and it's because I don't enjoy it. So that is, you know, traditionally, oh, a graphic designer, do you do logos? My answer is no, and then everyone gets confused, and I have to be okay with that. So it's then having those seasons of no that are saying, no, this no longer serves me. No, I don't charge that rate anymore. No, I'm not able to nor willing to exchange my time and my energy for that success metric. If I would rather be napping or hanging with the dog or cooking or eating, and I'm willing to let go of what the monetary gain would be, if it doesn't match, then I say no. And it's having that conviction in myself to go, okay, checking the list, checking it twice. No, go. You're not my client to deal with. Here's someone else.
That's awesome. Who are your favorite designers? I know you say you've got lots of favorite colors, but teal's the one. But are there designers or artists that you've drawn inspiration from in the way you conduct yourself or the way that you go about designing?
So I have a couple that I look to for creative inspiration. I have I'm a massive Gemma O'Brien, Mrs. Eves fan. I'm a massive Lauren Hom fan. I have incredible respect for a lot of the creatives that I have been lucky enough to interview on my own Slice of Advice Instagram Live that I do weekly.
Awesome.
But I also think that it's really relevant to understand that your inspirations need to have a stopping point in your own processes, because sometimes it leads to comparison and then we get in our own way.
Yes.
Like, I've got a massive, incredible respect for the people who I am actually closely, not in competition with, because I don't believe competition exists where community can.
Yes.
But I know that if I get too caught up in the, oh, they're doing that amazing thing, my brain goes, why aren't you? And I need to make sure that I separate that enough. And the best ways I can do that are, you know, limiting my exposure to them in the moments where I know I'm vulnerable. So when I scroll, I'm vulnerable and I'm open. Whereas when I'm specifically looking for inspiration, I can let them into that kind of process. And understanding that those two times are very different and very that they need to be separated.
I like this. There's this, it's a strange thing to say, but you strike me as someone who's very disciplined. You're very creative, but you're also very disciplined.
How deceptive of me. I'm so glad. I'm so wonderfully glad that I have deceived you into thinking that I am quite disciplined. I live on lists. I live on post-it notes.
Yep, I do too.
I'm pretty sure that I could take out some kind of share in post-it and really benefit off of that. But, you know, I think I tried structure. I tried really regimented structure and times and everything like that. And it's about, you know, knowing that some days are going to go to that timeline and some days are not. I have the wonderful blessing and curse of an ADHD brain. I am so happy and entertained by the way that my brain can work, but get mildly infuriated by the way that sometimes it does work. And instead of blaming it, knowing how to use it to the best of its abilities.
I'm a bit the same as you. I love to make plans and I love to break them. But it's nice to have, it's kind of nice to make the list and have that at least there to help guide you. But I quite like how you, it's always about you've got a central sort of calibration, I suppose, and you return to that.
It's the rudder.
Yeah, and you defend the rudder. Yeah, you stick with the rudder. Because, this podcast is aimed at people who are seeking to make that transition, but we can often have the wrong impression about what a creative life looks like, feels like, sounds like, what you have to be like as a creative. If there's any advice you could give to someone wanting to make that leap in that spirit, I suppose, what would you say to them?
Start messy and clean as you go, because starting messy means you've started and you won't be sitting there going and rehearsing the trauma and thinking about all the things that could go wrong. You're going to discover what will go wrong and know how to fix it on the fly. You'll be working those muscles to be able, I am someone who wishes I loved puzzles. I try puzzles constantly. Mainly because puzzles for me are resilience training. Does this work? No. Does it go here? No. Does it go there? No. And it's constantly trying different things. A puzzle starts messy and so should you. Clean as you go. Like, I think it's ride the bike till you can build the Ferrari. It's about least starting so that you can actually start that process and gain momentum.
Yeah.
And understand that, you know, at least you started. It doesn't have to be perfect, because perfect is so unrelatable. It's so unrelatable. So you won't make connections with perfection.
No, absolutely. I like that bicycle image. I mean, Lamborghini started as a tractor manufacturer, and then he was like, "Do you know what? Maybe we should just lower it a bit, you know."
One of my favorite lines out of a song by a wonderful artist called STS, Sugar Tongue Slim. I know I listen to rap. I'm that guy. but he does this, said this line of, it takes 6 months to build a Rolls Royce, 13 hours to build a Toyota. Do the math and know what's valuable. So if you're trying to rush the process, are you creating something that's less valuable?
100%.
And therefore understanding that 6 months to build a Rolls Royce is probably going to be really well invested time.
I like that a lot. And don't worry, I listen to hip hop too. A secret hack, I've got a book out at the moment. It's in the shops. But you can actually put on Nas and actually read it out to the beat. It's like...
I love it.
Because I secretly constructed it that way. And I was like, yeah, because the flow and, you know, the staccato sentences, long, short to make an overall. And I'm like, that's a secret you can do.
Exactly. And so that sort of thing
Yeah, just the way the brain, you've got to follow the brain.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the way the brain works. And that kind of comes back to, you know, when I did that year of musical theatre and I learned about that process and then going back to graphic design, it's not... I failed for a year and then I learned different things that I can then infuse into the way I work. You know, performing for an audition panel is kind of like performing for a client. You're trying to both gain the insight of each other's brains and understand and create something together. And the same thing goes for like the way that musicality works. Can you work that into a design process? Can you find a way to use the principles of different situations to create a new version of what didn't exist yesterday.
Yes. Now, I'm going to be a bit of a smart aleck here. I'll say there are two roads in the wood, like the famous poem. You took the road less travelled, but you've also created another road for yourself. All about getting paid and getting paid what you should be getting paid, all about how to price yourself as a creative. How did you get onto that? Was it something that you struggled with yourself, or that you found some good advice for that you want to teach?
So my, I guess, antithesis of the pricing queen, which is who I call myself proudly and loudly now, the pricing queen was created out of a few different avenues. One was necessity, because I needed to be able to separate the jasmine and the person who charged the bills, because I think that we get we need to, I guess, cut that tie of the emotional connection we have to money and creating like this alter ego. I mean, come on, if Beyonce can create an alter ego, which is Sasha Fierce that performs completely on stage, I can create the pricing queen. That's who she is. And so the pricing queen is someone who is the person I needed when I was growing up and going through my own journey and doubting my own value and discounting before I gave the client an opportunity to. She's the person who I needed when I was growing up. So I want to be that person for the next round of designers. I was finding more and more that other creatives who were, you know, incredible in their own right. They had these wonderful design studios and had these amazing opportunities, but they were sitting there and going, I don't know what to price. And they would ask me. And I kind of got to a point after, you know, being on a podcast talking about pricing, because it was an opportunity of like, oh, that's a topic I could talk about. Maybe I'll try talking about pricing and how I approach pricing. And then I had more people ask questions, and I had more opportunities that people were like, oh, what do you think of this price? What do you think about this? Is this an opportunity that I should be pursuing? What would you charge if this was you? And so it wasn't so much I fell into it, but kind of like a warm bath. I dipped my toe in. It was a little bit hot, but then I went back in and it was a little bit cooler now and a little bit cooler. And then I eventually fully submerged myself into being this pricing queen that is able to kind of fly in and help with other creatives and how they're able to approach pricing, because pricing is giving clients the choice to agree or disagree on the value that you provide and whether they match that, whether they have the same cards in their hand that they can play snap with and say, yes, I agree that it is worth that price. Let's work together.
I like it. My father-in-law was in the army for a long time, and he said they had a saying that said, if your attack is going well, it's an ambush. So is it the same kind of thing where, like, if you give a client a price and they immediately agree to it, it's probably the wrong price? Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the indicators, is definitely if you've gotten so many yeses that you forget what a no feels like, you should be upping your price.
Okay.
If you're getting yeses too fast, you should be upping your price. If you are so busy that you cannot comprehend how you're going to do the work, and then you get to the end of the week and you go,
yeah,
I made enough. If you're sitting there trying and you can still account for every single dollar that you've made, I actually don't think you've made enough. If you don't have a moment where you sit there and go, wait, how did that happen? Like, how did I just make that much money and able to have a life and enjoy it? Then that's probably an opportunity that you could be changing the way that you price, the way that you frame your pricing, because I think that's really important as well. We shouldn't be sitting there going, and we should not be offering services at product basis. Like, oh, I'm just going to discount my rates. Why? Are you a product or are you a service?
Yeah.
Stop treating yourself like the product that is sitting on the shelf that has been, you know, there's not 10,000 units of you. There's only one of you. So stop pricing yourself like you're a product. Start pricing yourself like you're a service. And you know, if you're getting frustrated because you're attracting cheap clients, it's probably because you're putting out cheap prices.
Yeah, there's no lawyers that give discounts the last time I checked, or a financial advisor, or no. So why should creatives? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it comes down to confidence, or a lack of knowledge, or maybe a bit of both?
I think that it's a bit of both. I think there is a key to confidence, but I don't think it's. I actually don't think confidence is something that someone has. I think it's something that someone can develop. And if it's a confidence in self, that's one thing. But if it's a confidence in capabilities, skills, abilities, and value, then that's something completely different. I can sit there and go, I'm not sure about who I am as a person. But if I know that I can solve your problem, I have confidence in the solution that I'm able to deliver, and understanding and knowing that I'm putting a confidence and a value on the solution, not on myself, then that's the more important equation to consider is, can you solve the problem? Can you make the client's life happy and easy and, you know, less stressed than they were before? Great. That's valuable. Start putting a dollar amount on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And people listening to this, what would you say to them about the fear that we have about, okay, I'm going to make the leap, but will I make enough money? Because that is the common thread that we find in speaking to people in this position. They're wanting to go all in, but they're worried that they won't be able to pay the bills because the safe job offers them that.
Yeah. Create yourself a grace fund in that if you're able to – so if you create yourself a fund of money that will last you for at least 6 months, if not a year – the freelance creative is a natural ebb and flow roller coaster up and down process. That's just how it is until you get to a point where you can have diversified ways of payment. I'll get to that in a little second. So by having this grace fund, you're actually like, if everything sits on a flat plane, dream with me here, people, singular flat plane in the middle of your periphery, and the bottom and the top, you are going to kind of go on this roller coaster up and down process. But if you have a grace fund, if you have that ability or that cushioning, you actually heighten the lows. You actually bring the lows up a little bit so that when you do have those drops, you're not dropping to nothing. You're dropping to, okay, well, this month will be about you dipping into my grace fund. And that's okay. Because most businesses that happen aren't actually profitable in their first year or two. And you are in a wonderful position that as a creative, you don't need that much equipment. You don't need that much investment to be able to start. You can start small and build. The other thing I would say is that when you do get to a point where you're able to have, you know, different clients, don't lock yourself into one way of pricing. I myself, through all of my clients, I have some that are billed on an hourly basis, some that are billed on a project rate, and they have either a 50% deposit, 50% on completion. They might have payment plans. I have quite a few clients that go on payment plans where I'm still reaping the rewards 6 months later from a job that I've done for them.
Nice.
As well as retainers. So a lot of the time when you are experiencing that roller coaster of income, it's potentially because you haven't tapped into the capability of diversifying either your income and payment types, so the way that you bill and the way that you price, as well as there's the obvious one of like diversifying your offering. So being able to tap into, okay, I'm doing services, but then I'm also kind of got some products over here and I might do some affiliate marketing, or, you know, this is where that knowledge base comes in of like, where else can I make money that doesn't rob me of my time? And that's kind of understanding that, you know, you can't expect to be at the halfway point of the book just because you started it. You need to actually go through that process and understand the character backgrounds and understand the nuances and understand where it's set and why these kind of characters all interact with each other. You can't expect to know the storyline at page one. So start small and work your way from there.
I love it, Jazz. Start messy, clean as you go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I should do that when I cook as well. But, you know,
Oh, yeah. I'm terrible for that. I can never cook for one person or two people. It's always family of 17.
Yeah.
There's only me and my partner and my dachshund living at home. Yep. So it's like, well, we're eating this same meal for the next week. I hope you enjoy it. And if everybody you don't, eat. Too bad.
Too bad. Jazz, it's been a brilliant chatting to you. How can Committed Creative Podcast listeners follow you and everything that you're doing?
Wonderful. So if you are a fan of pies, puns, and pricing related content, you can find me at JH Designs on Instagram. I'm incredibly active in there. I also have a wonderful community of Facebookers, which is Pricing for the Hungry Creative on Facebook. We just in January had a 5-day raise your rate challenge where 350 of us all came together and helped each other raise our rates, which was so much fun. But also I have a special gift for any one of the listeners of the Committed Creative Podcast. If you head to easyaspiepricing.com/committedcreative, you'll be able to find access to the pricing calculator that I've put together. So you know when you're sitting there going, I've got no idea how to price my time. If you start with your salary and then add in your expenses and portion out the actual hours that you want to work, this calculator spits out what your hourly rate should be based on your time, on your effort, your energy, expenses, and salary. And then you can adjust from there. Basically, it's trying to make it so that you don't have to do the math. And then you can kind of start from there and go, okay, I now know what the value of my time is. How can I make this worth my while?
I love it, Jazz. Let's break free. Let's create. Let's get paid.
I love it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Peace out.
Peace out.
I loved that chat with Jazz. I could have kept going for another hour or more, but time is money. My big takeaway from the design superwoman Jazz was the seasons of yes and the seasons of no, that there's power in taking part, but also power in defining and protecting your boundaries. And for the pricing queen, Jazz, I liked her polite yet firm take it or leave it attitude. Set your prices to the level you want and the right clients will come and happily stump up. Next week, we'll be speaking to another creative soul with insights into why this journey is so rewarding. Thank you for listening to the Committed Creative Podcast, and here's to going all in on your creative endeavors. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Committed Creative Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and learned at least one thing that will help you stay on the creative path.
If you liked it, please subscribe as there's plenty more to come. And we'd love it if you could leave us a review if you found the podcast worthwhile. And if you didn't, please send us your feedback. We're all ears. You can check us out online at redplatypuscreative.com or follow us on Facebook and Instagram at redplatypuscreative.
Remember, you are not alone in your creativity and you can make money from your creative pursuits. See you next time when we speak to another creative mind that's committed to making their way work.
Here's to going all in and becoming a committed creative.